Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, the very talented comedian Suzanne Westenhofer shares the very dramatic story of how she got her traumatic brain injury.
We get the valet. He's going to bring the car. I'm standing with her, and that's the last thing I remember. I woke up in the hospital with people looking, heads, faces over me, including my girlfriend and stuff. My girlfriend was like holding my hand saying, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'm going to be okay. How long have I been here? I got to go. I have a show this weekend. And then the doctor and my girlfriend sat with me and they were holding my hands and they said, it's 3 weeks later than you think it is.
Today on the show, comedian Suzanne Westenhofer shares a story about how she got a traumatic brain injury. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Suzanne Westenhofer, and you are listening to Story Worthy.
Welcome to Story Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 11 years now, or you're a new listener, welcome to Story Worthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed this story last week by comedian Felicia Madison. Felicia Madison frequently confused with Felicia Michaels. True or not? Suzanne,
yeah,
is it true?
Yeah, I would say that would happen. Well, first of all, people are not that, we don't pay that much attention. So
I know.
Felicia, you know.
I only know two Felicias, and they're both comedians, and their last names both start with M.
And it's all,
anyway,
bye, Felicia.
It's like, hey, it's just something to think about. And anyway, Felicia Madison last week, she talked about finding her career later in life. And she's just a very interesting person. She is all over the New York comedy scene, and she runs the West Side Comedy Club.
Oh.
And, she's a good contact in New York. That's what I'm saying, Suzanne.
I know.
And Felicia Madison, yeah, she's just delightful. She has three children we chatted about, and yeah, it was good stuff. So go back, you guys, listen to Felicia Madison, but not today. Don't go anywhere right now, because today I have one of my true comedy heroes. I'm not kidding. Suzanne Westenhofer, which is hard to say sometimes, but Suzanne Westenhofer, you are so talented, and you've been in this game for so flipping long, man. I mean, a lot of people have been in it for a long time, but you've been through so many hairstyles, you know. Decades and decades of big hair, small hair, medium hair.
I enjoy the big hair. If you look at all the pictures through the years, even when I had short hair, I was puffing it up and standing it up. I have some sort of big hair thing.
Did you get perms?
Yes. When I started stand up in 1990.
I hear you.
I would get spiral perms. And this is the absolute truth. I was poor too. So I would wait until the coupon came in the Sunday News for JCPenney, and I would get a spiral perm for $29.99.
Yeah.
And it would last, though, for like a year. So I only had to do once a year. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And your hair was so long. I mean, you were like straight on Stevie Nicks, wild and long hair.
But my natural hair is not straight or curly. It's bent. So
yeah,
it's not very
attractive.
What you mean. You have to do something with it.
I have the same hair. I either have to straighten it or curl it. It's one
yes,
or the other.
Correct.
But if I let it alone, in fact, when I leave it alone, when I'm not going out or whatever, obviously I'm not going to put any heat on my hair because you don't want to mess it up, right? You don't want the split ends or whatever. So when I go out to do stand-up, just open mics, I'm not going to do my hair. Are you kidding? But sometimes I do because I'm going somewhere else or whatever. So last week I walk into the Fourth Wall Cafe and Joe Manente goes, Blackburn, what happened to your hair? And I'm like, oh, my God,
I fixed
Joe.
It.
Is it that shocking? No, it was messy.
Oh, it was the messy
But
hair.
Anyway, It's just, whatever. Whatever. Listen to us talking about hair.
How girly are we being at this moment?
What I really want to talk about, Suzanne, is I want to go on an Olivia cruise, and I want to know if I'm allowed.
Are you a girl?
I am a girl.
Are you a lesbian?
No.
Still allowed.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm not saying that there won't be some women there trying to Red Rover, bring you right over.
I would hope that there would, or I would not feel attractive.
The nice thing about when women do that is it's never in that aggressive way that a man tries to do it.
Yeah, they're not going to hump your leg. No. They're not going to try to freaking get a dry hump at the bar in a stool. No, but seriously, tell me about the Olivia cruises. Because, like, for instance, one of my heroes of all time is Melissa Etheridge, right? I love Melissa Etheridge more than anything. I also love, just a tremendous, I love female rock and rollers is what I love. And Sonia Lee. Are you familiar with Sonia Lee by any chance?
No.
Anyway, another fabulous rocker. And I know she goes on the cruises as well. And I have always thought that must be so much flipping fun. You see the Indigo Girls are up there and people are going nuts. I mean, it really looks like a blast. And so you add that and then they've got some great comedians as well. So they've got the comedians and the rock stars. It's like, it sounds like a perfect thing for me.
It is. You can come.
Okay.
You totally can. And if you, I'm doing one to Turks and Caicos in November.
Oh my gosh.
So if you jump on that one, I'll protect you and introduce you around.
Turks and Caicos. Wow, that'll be fun. Have you been there before? You have?
Yes. I have been cruising with Olivia since, like, 93. So I've gone to a lot of places.
And Olivia isn't the name of the boat or the cruise line. It's the name
it's
of
the company.
So talk about it. Tell me about it.
In 1974, a bunch of female musicians got together and realized that they couldn't create albums. They couldn't do it. Women weren't allowed to be producers. You may not remember this, but women weren't allowed to play drums or bass guitar.
Oh, come on. Stop it.
Remember?
Wait a minute.
Remember Karen Carpenter? Played drums, sang, right? That's how we saw her. That's how we all saw her. Mm-hmm. Within a year, we never saw her behind the drums again because it was considered manly. It wasn't okay for women to play drums.
That is so crazy. I never thought that that's why she stepped out from the drums. I thought she stepped out because of the duo that was.
No.
You know what I mean? I thought it was because she was the singer in the beautiful dresses and he was
And she never wanted to wear the beautiful dresses. She just wanted to play guitar.
How did you know this?
I've known it from people who've worked with her, and then I think they in one of the later books, they even wrote about it, that she had spoken about it.
Wow.
But
wow.
So this group
That's
of girls in California got together and decided that then, well, F it. You know, we will start our own women's record company where we do all of it. Only women doing everything, engineering, all of it. And it was called Olivia Records. And independent-wise, it was extraordinarily successful. And they had different artists, all women artists. I mean, everything. It was all female from stop to... And around, I think, this is where I'm going to get it wrong. I want to say 80-ish, sometime in the 80s, one of the women, Chris Williamson, who's one of the big stars of Olivia Records, one of their big stars, she said, after a concert, she turned to the woman who was running, who was kind of became the president, if you will, of Olivia Records, named Judith Lugach. And she said, wouldn't it be great if we could do this on the water? And it was like, bing, 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 bing. So Judy took everything she had. She rented a boat. And she put the word out there. And women came on. And they are all women boats. The only men on the boats are like,
wow,
making your bed, or swabbing the deck.
Serving drinks?
We even have a lot of female bartenders. It's gotten to the point now where there's very, very few men on the boat at all.
Well, that's so comfortable.
And the women who work for those companies are so excited. Like, we have the Olivia cruise next month. Anybody want to work? And I've talked to enough workers on these cruises, and they're like, all the women are like, yes, yes, yes. Because they love it. It's like a mini matriarchy.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun, and they're all going to have fun, and everybody's going to tip very well, and it's going to just be a party.
Nobody's going to grab your butt.
Right. Wow. Well, that sounds fascinating, and I truly would love to go on one of those boats.
I highly recommend it.
Melissa, when Melissa does it, does she like rent out part of a boat? It's not. Obviously, she doesn't own a cruise ship. Does she do like a deal where I'll buy 1,000 seats on this boat? And then there might be other passengers.
Yes, that's my understanding. I'm not positive of that, but Olivia rents out the whole boat. So when you do an Olivia cruise, it's all Olivia, all women. Everything's focused on women and lesbian.
I want to go. I really do.
But now, remembering that Melissa Etheridge actually has been on a couple of Olivia cruises.
I've heard you talk about her. And so, she wants to have fun too. I mean, gosh, this is like a dream for everybody. I mean, to me, I don't, you know, whether you're straight or gay, I just think it sounds like an amazing time to be on the water with good people, hearing good music, and hearing good comedy that is politically forward and smart. In other words, I'm not going on a Kid Rock cruise, you know. Can you imagine?
I tell people all the time because I'll meet lesbians who will say, oh, I don't want to be on a ship with 2,000 lesbians. Or I don't want to be, because they also do resorts. So I don't want to be on a resort with 1,800 lesbians. And I'm like, or back with them when they had all the lesbian festivals. And I would say, you think that. And then you get there. And in less than 24 hours, when you suddenly realize that you are living in a matriarchy for the first and potentially only time you ever will, you don't realize how much you acquiesce your entire life to the patriarchy when you're a girl. You just don't realize it. You've been doing certain things a certain way forever. And when suddenly you're on a ship for a week or a resort or something, and all the rules are women rules, the way women would think. It's different. It's gentler. It's funner.
Yeah. Is there like a whole course on multitasking? Do they have one of those? I'm trying to think how good women are at certain things. There could be like, you know, ladies now on the promenade deck, multitasking. Come on down with your cruise director, Suzanne Westenhofer, and she'll lead you through a series of exercises and see how many things you can multitask. It could be a game show on the ship.
We do game shows. You know what? I don't think...
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, I think that they don't... there's not a lot of... what do I want to say?
Competitions.
Yeah, the competitions are more like sports because it's lesbians.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I have a game show, and I think it would go over very well on a ship. It's called Story Smash, the storytelling game show. My audience is like rolling their eyes, like, oh,
we've heard this.
She never stops talking about it. No, but we played for 3 years straight at the Hollywood Improv every month, and it's been going very strong. Through the pandemic, we played over 30 times, and I always have on fantastic comedians. Judy Gold's been on, and Blaine Kapach is always on, and Danny Zucker is there, and I have some great... Kevin Nealon's been on. Oh. It's just been a great time. You'll have to look it up. StorySmashShow.com, you guys. Head over to StorySmashShow.com, and that's where you're going to find out when we're back live. Because my goal is August, but now there's this Delta variant, and things are changing quickly in California, as you know. We're back to the masks, etc. So I'm not sure how it's going to go down, but do check out StorySmashShow.com and also follow Story Smash on Instagram. At Story Smash, and then you'll know what's coming up.
You should give one pager about what that game
I
show
will,
is
right away
with your name and stuff, it's so that I can hand it to the people at Olivia and say, "Why don't you bring on Christine and she'll do this show?" and she'll do this. And
I would love to do that.
Oh, I can do that. For you. I can't hire you, but I
would
I can
appreciate that.
I can make you jump some steps.
Awesome. And I can send you the pitch deck, really,
because
it's just such a smart show, and I've done it for other corporations. Oh, it's unbelievable because there's like 16. There's 16 titles on the wheel, right? 16 topics on the wheel, and the people go on, spin the wheel, whatever they land on, they tell a true 1 minute story.
Oh.
And then there's judges. So like you would be a judge. That's how like Danny fits in, or all these right. bigger judges I have, you know, like, I'm trying to think of all the names. Mary Lynn Rice Cub is on a lot, and a lot of top comedians. Did you hiccup?
I'm going to hiccup probably again too.
Okay. No problem.
It's part of my story.
Oh, okay. Okay. Let's get to your story because truly, I'm excited to hear this. Topic is how I got my traumatic brain injury. So I'm not excited to hear it, but I'm super curious. A traumatic brain injury. I know my sister's a speech therapist, and she deals with people that have had, you know, traumatic brain injury, teaching them to speak again. And I know how terrible that is. But I don't know your story at all about that, Suzanne. So let's head over to there in 1 second. But before we do, are you Amish? What's the Amish factor?
Hey,
you grew up?
No, I grew up in Amish country.
You grew up in Lancaster County.
Where are you from?
Okay, I'm from Pennsylvania as well. Pittsburgh.
I went to Clarion. Pittsburgh.
Okay, yeah. So Clarion College. I could see the logo. Yeah. I see it. Well, yeah, I mean, and I've gone back and forth through the state, you know, to Philadelphia, to the beach or whatever, down the shore.
Down the shore, huh?
And I've been through Amish country. And yeah, it's some wacky, it's surreal is what it is.
It's like being in a movie.
The horse and buggies. Yeah, it is like being in a movie. It's like being on a set or in Solvang with the Dutch.
It really is.
Do you know Solvang?
Because... Yeah.
So, okay, you just grew up in Lancaster County. For how many years did you grow up there?
When I was 18, I left for college and went to Clarion, and I never came back. After college, I went to New York.
Yeah. Clarion College must have been like the big city for you then.
No, it was so rural.
It was still
No, because I lived fairly close to Lancaster, fairly close to Harrisburg, which were not exactly big cities, but, you know. Clarion is very up there, rural.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I went to school in Pittsburgh at Duquesne University.
Oh, Duquesne.
Smarty
pants.
Yeah, but not so much. All my brothers and sisters, I have four sisters and a brother, and we all went through Duquesne because my father worked there.
Oh, great. So that's expensive.
Tuition for six kids, yeah. Yeah, hypothetically, he's probably the highest paid employee they ever had. All right, so we're going to get over to your story. But before we do, I just want to remind you guys to follow me on social media. I mean, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not even going to go further than that, but I will say at Storyworthy. That's like ground control right there. So thank you. All right, you guys, she's here right now. Suzanne Westenhofer, she's a comedian. Actually, Suzanne, I swear to God, you're a force, man. You are a force. I mean, seriously, even like the stuff I was watching from 91, 92, 93 on YouTube, the really early stuff, you command the stage. Or maybe it was a little later, but it was definitely the big hair, I was watching the big hair decade for sure. And you came on with so much confidence. It's really impressive how you got that confidence at such a young age.
I have never been shy. I have never been retiring. I have always, I assume it's DNA, you know, comes from my parents, grandparents, whatever. But yes, I've always been like, step up and ask for what you want or tell them what always.
Yeah, that's really, really lucky because a lot of people never get to that place. And then some people get it like at the wrong point in their life. Like that's when they have a divorce or that's when they make a big decision. Cause it's like, oh shit.
Right.
I should have been speaking up all along, you know? Like I would say my epiphany was when I was 31 and came to Los Angeles. It's like, oh shit. That's what I was supposed to do, you know? And I got here, thank God. But I'm just saying like to have an, usually it happens with an epiphany, and for you, you just always have had it. So are you the oldest child, I'm wondering?
No, I'm the youngest.
Oh, the youngest,
I
okay.
Have two older sisters.
Well, that's true on the other side. Yeah, yeah. All right, so you do have several comedy CDs available right now on Amazon. One is called I'm Not Cindy Brady. And I love that title.
It's a true story, too. That's the thing. Okay. When you called and you said, tell a story, and I'm like, that's what I do for a living, because I don't write jokes. I tell you stories that are true in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I love about Storyworthy, is because I'm bringing on comedians, and that's exactly what they do. And comedians know brevity, so the stories aren't like NPR mothish that go on for flipping ever. Mm-hmm. They're a little shorter. All right. So you have also several DVDs out on Amazon, one called A Bottom on Top, one called Live from the Village, one called Laughing Matters. And then, of course, you had your own HBO special. And then I saw another show of you, and it was called The Christian, the Dyke, and My Mom.
Is that a show?
Was it a show or just a piece of yours?
No, that's
it's on
a piece
YouTube.
Of a show.
Okay.
Because my two older sisters.
Well, it was
sisters,
very funny.
It's my two older sisters. I have an older sister who's a Christian, a virgin Christian.
Right.
And then my other sister's a lesbian.
So, the Christian, the Dyke. I think that is what it was, which really made me laugh.
However, I would watch that show.
Oh, man. In a
and that's a sitcom
heartbeat.
Waiting to happen.
I mean, are you kidding me? The fact that your sister, your older sister, decades old now, is a virgin. I mean, I'm just
Correct.
Saying. It's curious.
Correct.
That's
curious. No, it's weird. And she's, yeah. You know, 60-some years old, and it's bizarre.
Wow.
Who doesn't have sex ever?
Did she ever want to be? She didn't want to be like in a nunnery or anything, did she?
Well, she thought she might want to for a minute when she was like 17 or 18, until my mom pointed out that we were Lutheran. We didn't have any nuns.
You know, that's actually pretty interesting. That's something that separates Catholics as well, Catholics from Christians, as it were, is that Catholics have nuns. And all the other ones, like Methodist, Protestant, Lutheran,
very few they don't have that.
They don't have that. That's interesting. Huh.
We don't have priests.
Yeah, that's right. You guys can find out a lot more about Suzanne over at her website, SUZ.
Or religion.
Yeah. Follow her over at her website, SuzanneW.com. So you got that, SuzanneW.com. And then you can also follow her on social media at SZWest1. SZWest1.
Follow me on Twitter. That's where I'm very chatty and opinionated.
Me too. I love the Twitter because
I love
wordplay.
Thank you. Me too. I just said it.
Explosion.
Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah, and Instagram, I force myself to post, but I do.
Same
but
with
I have
Facebook,
to force
I'm like,
it. I have to force it, yeah, because I just, I see too many happy families. I don't know. That's not a bad thing, but I don't know. It's just, you
I
know,
just don't
the hashtag forever home.
Ate.
Yeah, and all the food and all the perfection, because nobody's going to post when they're crying in the closet, you know? Does that happen?
No. And it's kind of, I find Facebook especially is very boring.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it really is. Well, they don't.
Try.
I don't like the algorithm because you really don't know what they're showing people. So when you only
well,
get three
yeah,
likes
that.
On something, it's because they only showed 15 people. You know, you just have no control. It's frustrating
Correct.
When somebody has your content. Anyway, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Suzanne Westenhofer.
Okay, then I just realized I'm not sure where to start. Okay, so, and this was 6 years ago. I had a weekend free. What? Because I travel a lot for comedy. I'm usually gone on the weekends across the country. And my girlfriend, I would like to say partner, but we don't have a law firm. And we're not married. And two of our friends, another lesbian couple, we never see each other, so you do that thing where you're like, we gotta have dinner. So we met for dinner right here in Los Angeles, place that's gone now, it's called the Fig and Olive. And I stepped outside to get the car with the, not my girlfriend, but with my other friend, another partner. And this is how it goes, for real. So we get the valet. He's going to bring the car. I'm standing with her. It's a little warm, you know, in the evening, just like a little warm, not hot, not anything major. I'm not overheated. I've had, we've been there eating for about 2.5 hours. I've had maybe a glass and a half of wine. So I'm not drunk, nothing, anything. And that's the last thing I remember. I woke up in the hospital with people looking, you know, heads, faces over me, including my girlfriend and stuff. And I was like, what's going on? And my girlfriend was like holding my hand saying, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'm going to be okay. What happened? Why am I in the hospital? You know? And then they had to explain to me. First I said, but I can't, how long have I been here? I got to go. I have a show this weekend in Provincetown, ironically. I have to get to Provincetown. And then it was like they made everybody leave the room. And then the doctor and my girlfriend sat with me and they were holding my hands and they said, it's 3 weeks later than you think it is. And I was like, what does that mean? How is it 3 weeks later? And then very slowly, they had to tell me that while I was standing out front for reasons unknown, and yes, I've had a billion tests, and I continue to have tests, I'm just standing there, and I passed out. So all 150 pounds of me, I passed out standing up. So I fell down onto cement and smashed my face. And my friend screamed. My girlfriend came out. They flipped me over. One of them called 911. My girlfriend did CPR on me. Can you imagine? And we had only been together barely a year. She had just moved here like 11 months before. So she's in from Boston. So she's in LA on the street and doing CPR on me, which wasn't working. And it turned out our other friend, one of the other guys who was with us, hadn't been an ENT in another life. So she did the bonk, the smack onto the chest. And
really?
And then
you wait a second. So you lost, you weren't breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You fell over, hit your face, and stopped breathing.
Yeah. I guess.
Oh, my God.
I hit my head and died, I guess.
Oh, my God.
It's weird. I hate, it's weird to say it that way. So she hit me on the, and then the restaurant was right near Cedars-Sinai. So the ambulance came up. They put me in the ambulance. I vomited everywhere. That's the part I always remember. I don't remember. I remember. I don't know any of this. This story has all been told to me.
Right.
By
well, you just ate, so I'm sure that you
right.
emptied the contents of what you just ate. Yeah.
They took me to the
Cedars.
Hospital. Took me to Cedars, and I had a brain bleed. My brain was bleeding, and they were asking my girlfriend, "Can they drill a hole into my head to let out this pressure and to let out run?" And she said, I just moved here. We're not related. She's my girlfriend. We weren't married. And here is why I love Los Angeles. Love Los Angeles. Because this is 6 years ago, you know? He goes, the doctor says to my girlfriend, he goes, come here a minute. And they walk out away from everybody else. And he says, sign this. Okay, you're her wife right now. Okay, do you want this to be okay? And he just took care of it. He didn't like go, oh, well, we have to wait until we get her mom in here or somebody who's related.
Wow.
He just
amazing.
Saw the situation and he knew we were together.
And, amazing.
So I didn't have to have my head drilled in, which was nice. The bleed got so big and then it stopped. And that, but I was in a coma.
But wait a second. I thought you said that the doctor wanted her to sign on to that, to relieve
case,
the pressure.
In case the bleed got worse and they needed to relieve the pressure. He had to get that signed right away. But my body did it all its own in the next hours. But I was in a coma. And then I was in what they call a natural coma for a few days. And then they kept me in a drug-induced coma for about 3 weeks.
Oh, my God. And they were monitoring you, and you had food tubes in you and all those things, and you probably lost 30 pounds or something, because that's terrifying, right? I'm thinking of that movie, the one with George Clooney, and they're in Hawaii, and that lady gets hit by a motorboat, and then she is, you know, the whole movie, she's dying. Oh, it's really good. You know, George Clooney, and come on, you guys, help me out. This is when I need to have feedback. Yeah, me too. And you know who else is in it is my girlfriend, Mary. Mary Birdsong is in it. And I think it starts with a D, and it's George Clooney, and they're in Hawaii.
Wait, you said D. And, oh, that almost had it.
The Descendants. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, I was thinking about that, because that woman in the movie, she got so thin so fast, you know, I mean, did that happen to you like that? Like, were you skeletal? What was the situation when you woke up?
I was thinner. Well, when I woke up, I had a brain injury, and my brain injury is in, let me make sure I do this right. It's in my frontal lobe, my left frontal lobe. And that is emotion. Mm. And so a lot of things happen. So you stay in the hospital. I was in the hospital for another month, easy. And I was very fortunate because they had warned Janine, my partner, they had warned her she might not know you. She might not be able to speak. She might not be able to walk. She might not be able to, you know, all these things that could happen, right? Well, I woke up.
Yeah, amnesia.
Everything. So I woke up and I was able to walk. I was able to do everything. But my emotion and my memory were wiped out. So the memory part was really hard because people I know and love would come to see me at the hospital, and they would come and sit at the end of the bed, and they would hold my hand, and they would go, "Suzanne, are you okay? I miss you so much. I know what's going on." And in my brain, I'm going, "Who is this person? I have never seen them before." And I'm an actor, so I would go, "Yeah, I'm fine. Sure. Uh-huh." And I would try to get more and more information, trying to know them. Right. And then we got into a little thing where my girlfriend would write down who they are and like hand me a little piece of paper as I was talking to them. And it would say something like, "This is Tisha. You met her on a cruise. You love her. Sure. Blah, blah, blah." You know what I mean? And I would read the and so that I could remember things.
That is unbelievable. And then how did your memory come back? Did it come back? Is it?
Slowly, initially, the first things that happened was, what happens is when you lose some things in the front of your brain, your old school brain, where your medulla oblongata, you know, it comes up and takes over. So initially I thought everyone was against me and I had to fight them and I had to escape this place they were keeping me in. So they would take me to to a treadmill, right? And walk on this treadmill for a while. And I would look out. This is within the first days of my waking up. And I would look out the window of the hospital of Cedars. And I would plan my escape because of these horrible people that were keeping me prisoner in this place I didn't understand.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was bizarre. Because some of that I remember clearly, you know, like I remember it now.
But you knew Janine. She was okay.
I did not. I knew her face. I knew I loved her. I knew I wanted her to be with me, but I did not remember her name, which is very weird.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So then what happens? I mean, you work with all sorts of therapists and they keep you there?
Well, I worked with therapists for a while, but I'm an arrogant little asshole. And I didn't do well with a lot of the therapists, even though I've been in mental therapy many, many times, and I'm very, very supportive of it. But the one gal who had the most success with me was like maybe 20 years old, and she was really just somebody there to like help you change into your back into your nightgown and things like that. But I mm-hmm. trusted her for some reason. She's probably a little lesbian. Who knew? And I'll never know. I let her teach me how to shower and shave my legs and shave my underarms and wash my hair because I wouldn't let anyone else do that kind of stuff. Like, but I trusted her for some reason. There was something about her that let me. So almost immediately, people had to go through her to teach me certain things. And
so you had to teach yourself all over again, all those steps, everything?
I didn't have to learn to walk again. Like, it mm-hmm. wasn't motor skills.
What about eating?
I didn't have any hunger, and because I whacked my head, and my nose, I lost a good 70% of my sense of smell, which means you lose most of your sense of taste. So you're not hungry and you don't care.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
So you don't care. Things don't taste like anything. So
then was your family in town? Did any of your sisters come around? Who was checking on you every day?
I had a pack of lesbians.
That's nice.
My mom lives in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania with her husband. Her husband is an asshole. Oh, he's dead now. Bummer. But my mom was well underway with dementia. She was starting to have dementia. Very, sure. very early signs. And so nobody told her. Mm. My oldest sister, who's the born-again Christian virgin, we told her, but we're not close because she thinks I'm going to hell because I'm a homosexual.
It's too crazy. And, it's just too crazy. Yeah. You can't give any attention to that. Like energy. So not her.
I don't.
Okay.
It's been forever. And then my sister that I'm very close to, who is also a lesbian, she's an obese woman, mm-hmm. and she is unable to fly sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when she gets here, she's country folk. She's terrified to drive here.
Yeah, I get it.
She doesn't want to help. I mean, she wants to help. She would want to do anything she could for me.
Right.
But she can't.
Yeah.
She couldn't. So she didn't come out. Two women that my girlfriend and I had become very close friends with on one of the Olivia cruises happened to be very wealthy. Who knew? They just, like, dropped their lives and came out here and took care of Janine.
Janine
was at the hotel.
Supported her.
At the hospital with me.
Sure.
So they just came here and cooked for Jay and did laundry and took after our cats and, you know,
that's
that kind
nice.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
So that
that's
Jay
so
could spend every second at the
hospital. Okay. So then finally, when do they release you from the hospital? Like, you're able to do pretty much everything, or do you still need at-home care?
Were they supposed to let me from out of the hospital, or when did I demand to be out of the hospital?
What's that all about?
I'm a smart girl. I'm an arrogant girl, everything. So as soon as I started to feel even like that much better, I said, I gotta get out of here. And they were like, she might do better at home anyway. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came home, and for 30 days, I had to be babysat, which means I could never be alone at any point during 24 hours. So the girl who had been my publicist, and so she was super organizing, she organized all my friends. Like,
great. Yeah.
Linda, you'll be with Suzanne from 11 o'clock until 4.
Right.
And then Jeanette, you'll be here from 4. You know what I mean? And
so
they did
great.
That.
So great.
But what was so weird, the weirdest part, the part that I could not, that took forever to get over too, is like I said, when you lose some senses, other senses come up and take care of it. And so fear became my driving force. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of people. I was afraid of sounds. I was afraid of light. So, like, my friend Jenny would come over to watch me, and she had a key because I couldn't go to the door. I would stay in my back bedroom, and I would open the door just a little bit, and I'd go, Jenny, are you there? And she'd go, yeah. And I go, Jenny, I can't be out there with you, but you know where everything is, right? I'm such a homemaker. Like, if you want to make yourself something to eat and there's soda in the fridge, like, I didn't know.
Wow.
It was so hard for me to have people over and not take care of them because I'm a caretaker. But she would just come over with a computer or watch cable or whatever and hang out for the day. And they rotated doing that for about 30 days. Different people who I, like, angels. Lesbians are angels anyway. Women are angels.
I think so, too.
They really step up. And so everyone stepped up. And I think the hardest thing to get over was fear.
Yeah. So, I mean, did they tell you to expect that, or they didn't know what to tell you to expect?
No, they weren't sure about that, but they said it was part of it.
Yeah. It's just so different from who you were. It's the opposite.
Correct. Which I was never afraid.
Yeah, so I'm talking about your confidence and your ability to be on stage and just command the whole room. And
right.
Now all of a sudden you lost all those skills. Did you remember that you had those skills?
That was hard. I knew I was a comedian. I mean, there are some funny stories, like what I would remember. Like, I had quit smoking years before, but I was sneaking them prior to this happening, like when I was on the road, not major, but, you know, like having one now and again. And so Janine loves to tell the story about how I was like 2 a.m. and I woke up and I went, hey, didn't I used to smoke? I think I smoked. Where are my cigarettes? And she's never smoked a cigarette in her life, right? Athlete. And she goes, I don't know. I don't think you smoked. She's lying right to me, and she can't lie, right? And I'm going, well, I can clearly tell you're lying, so where are my cigarettes? And then, so then she's like, all right, okay, fine. And she finds the cigarettes, whatever. And I'm in boxer shorts and a bra. And I walk out front to smoke. And she has to go, guess what? We wear all our clothing when we go outside. Because the littlest, weirdest stuff.
It wouldn't occur to you.
It's like I didn't think, oh, I'm not dressed.
Dude, this is all so scary. I mean, this is a brush with death.
I mean, it's a brush with death, for sure.
You could have died. I mean, this was so precariously.
And officially, I was dead for a couple of seconds.
On the sidewalk.
On the ground.
That is just so scary. I can't even believe how something like that can happen to anybody, anytime. I kept thinking you were going to say you guys were standing at the valet and somebody hit you with a car or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see
you just passed out.
Falling over. Yeah. What
and if
God.
I had done that, if I had passed out 20 minutes beforehand, I'd have been sitting at a restaurant. I'd have been sitting in a chair. I'd have slumped to the side and it had just been a stupid story. Like, remember that time you passed out in a restaurant?
Oh.
Instead, this was a life-changing event. Some bad things that happened. I actually lost friends. Friends who couldn't take it.
They couldn't
be around me because I was different and grow and having trouble. And it was too much for them. I actually lost friends. That's a weakness I can't wrap my head around.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, though. I had that as well because I had cancer and had to go through chemotherapy. And there was a schedule of my friends taking me to chemo and went on for 6 months. And some people never came around. Some people never said anything.
My girlfriend had cancer. She says the same thing.
They would say to me later, like, I just didn't know what to say. And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. Why don't you just say,
be,
like,
can I, motherfuckers, just be.
Can I hang out with you? I know. Because people, they do. They get overwhelmed. They don't know.
The weakness, I think, is pathetic. I'm sorry.
Pathetic.
Ask more for
so
yourself.
It's so pathetic. I know. It's so true. But, step the fuck up and be normal. Because what if it happened to you? What do you want? What do you want? People to avoid you because they're freaked out?
Because they're scared. Or they don't know what to say.
I know, or whatever. You know, it's not. It was not my fault. You know,
no,
it's so crazy.
Now the good things. I got good things. Yes,
I'm just saying real quick. It wasn't personal. That's all I'm saying.
No, I knew it wasn't personal. I truly, even at that time, saw it as a pathetic weakness in their
yeah,
part.
It is.
My God, I hope someone you love never gets cancer. That's literally how I felt.
Or people can't handle going to a funeral or can't handle going to whatever.
Grow up.
Like, well, you better step up.
Life is tough, but it's also beautiful. You're so willing to do the beautiful things. But here's the thing. Yeah. So then I'm home for like, it's been 2 months since it happened. And I'm dying to get back on stage because I don't know if I can do it. Like, I don't know if I can be a stand-up. Like, did I lose that? Right? And I had to know. Because people say don't define yourself by your career, but comics define themselves by their career. We're comics.
Well, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you
it's
would never know unless you get back up. So you had to get up. What happened?
So it was 2 months after the accident, nine weeks. And I scheduled, my booker scheduled me shows in the Pacific Northwest, three of them up in Seattle, Portland, Pasco. Everybody, all my friends, even my agent, friends, everybody was saying, no, don't, you're not ready. Some of the doctors, you're not ready. And I remember it very clearly, lying on my couch here and going, if I don't get up and remember who I am, there's no reason for me to heal. I need to be me to heal. You know what I mean? So I begged my girl, and she's the best. She's the greatest person. I looked her in the eyes and I said, I have to get up, even if I don't do well. Then I'll know that. I've got to practice. I've got to get better or whatever. But I've got, that's how I define myself. I'm a comedian. I'm a performer. That's my core. If you don't let me do this, there's no reason for me to do all these exercises and stuff like that to heal. I need to know that's there, that's still in me. And she didn't want me to do it. She was scared, but she took off work and she drove with me and we drove up and we did the three shows and they were great. And it was all still in me. It was all still in me. I was better on stage than I was off.
Wow. Did you go back to notes or your specials or your CDs?
No.
Did you listen to your CDs?
No.
Did you have all new material?
I just did my show.
No, your show from before?
I don't have a show like that. I have a very extemporaneous kind of way anyway, where I bring things back and then I let them go forever. And then I do stuff for a couple of weeks and I'll never do it again. And my shows are very extemporaneous that way.
I love that. Well, it's art. It's your art. I love
that. It's mine. Yeah. And so I got up. I did all three shows. Did great. And that was so. That is when I knew I would heal.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
I just like I knew. Now everything is going to be okay.
It's only been 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you at 100%?
Why? What makes you think?
She just flew a water bottle past her face. That's so funny. Like she can't put water to her mouth.
It took I guess I'll always be getting just a little bit better, but it took about almost 4 years for me to get over the fear. I was able to hide it from everyone. I'm an excellent liar. I'm an excellent manipulator. I'm an excellent actor. So no one knew I was afraid of things that I was doing or why I couldn't go to certain events or whatever. They didn't know it. But the fears finally... It's very rare now when I'll have like a day. And I'll explain the fear to you as a woman. You'll understand this. You know how when you first started menstruating and you're young and you get crabby and you're so freaking angry, but you're not really angry at anything. But it doesn't make the anger less real.
Right. Hormones.
Well, that's what the fear was like. There wasn't. Wow. Anything to be afraid of, and I knew it, but it didn't make the fear less.
Was the fear anxiety?
No. It was absolute, like in a hotel with all the lights on, up under my thing, just going, like rocking back and forth.
That is so sad.
And I would start to, and I would do this. I would go, Suzanne, there's nothing to be afraid of. There is nothing to be afraid of. You know there's no, you've been on the road for years. Nothing ever happened. The door is locked. It's 3 a.m. Everybody's asleep. And I would just constantly do that. I would just constantly do it. And it finally, I'm going to say it finally dissipated almost 100% about 2 years ago. It still will flick up. It'll flick up here and there, but nothing major.
Did you get on antidepressants like Paxil or something?
No.
Not really. Wow. No. You did it all on your own. You didn't do medication.
Well, for that particular thing, I had to take meds for pain.
Yeah. Because
prior to this accident, I had had 5 back surgeries.
Mm.
So I was having a lot of trouble with my back.
Man, you are a wonder. You are truly a wonder. You have been through a fucking lot. I had no idea the side of you.
Stupid medical stuff.
Yeah, I know, but whatever. Everybody's got it. It's not like anybody's getting out of this alive. Somebody is going to have a problem sooner or later. And I get concerned about my friends who don't see doctors, who don't get prostate exams or breast exams.
Oh, my God, I know.
I get so freaked out. Like, are you fucking kidding me? You are playing with fire because I'm a cancer survivor. You know, like, I know that shit can go down like
that. She does the same thing.
Shit can go down so fast. You just have to stay so on top of your health. And one more thing. Nobody else will. That's the thing.
That's exactly right.
Nobody else is going to say, you got to get your mammogram. People are like, okay, fucking don't. I don't care.
No, I used to drag all my lesbian friends from the 80s on to get their freaking pap smears.
Ugh.
Oh, I'm not having sex with men. I don't need to worry about that. I don't need to worry about it. I'm like, no, we're going.
But that's interesting, right? I could see that side of things. They're not going for birth control, but they've got to have their cervix checked.
But you could still get cancer.
Yeah, you have ovaries.
The guy doesn't give you cancer. It's like very, very bright women who would be suddenly like, oh, yeah, you're right. I guess.
That's still part of my body.
And there is, you know what? Here's the thing. There's been the number one thing that I am happy about with this story is it was a terrible thing. I wish I hadn't gone through it, but I'm through it now. And I mean, I guess I'll always be going through it to some degree. But prior to whacking my head, I had been in therapy a million times. It was the main thing in my life was the need, the desperate, like, thick need to have everyone like me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes performers a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Everybody has to like me, right? Within days of waking up after the coma, it's gone.
Oh, that's nice.
It's just gone.
That's beautiful. Wow.
And I cannot even tell you how amazing I mean, you're a performer.
Right. So all you want is somebody to give you approval.
You want everybody to like me. Everybody has to like me. Everybody has to like me. And to have that just be gone is
that's amazing.
It's the freedom of that.
Yeah. I would love to have that at a club, like not try to make the people not laughing laugh. But if you're not laughing at a club, I'm going right at you, man. I am going to nail you until you look at me and I will make you laugh. You know
but
what I mean?
That's on stage performer-wise. That won't go away. You don't ever want that to go away because that's part of you.
Okay.
I'm talking about... Good. You need everyone to like you.
Yeah. Somebody, like, I read somewhere on Twitter, you don't need to charm everybody. I love that. You know what I mean? I love that. Like, you don't need to charm everybody. You don't have to even be nice to anybody, for that matter. But you definitely don't have to go overboard with the mailman. Can I help you carry that? Shut the fuck up. You know? Just let him do his job. You know?
But what, once I was free of that, it's amazing how much people like me. Because I am not pushing myself at them to like me. I'm just doing nice things for them. And then they like you.
And that's the way it should be, for sure.
And that's probably the way it should have been since the beginning.
Absolutely. So, I agree.
And the only other thing that's bad about what happened is because my girlfriend did CPR and saved my life on the street, literally I lose every argument.
Because you know what, Suzanne?
Nothing.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, seriously, you think
it's
about
over.
What she went
I
through.
Know.
I mean, on her side of things, she could be like, she could write a. I mean, this is what like the Descendants was. You know, George Clooney was alive and his wife was in the hospital and all this is going down and she can't even speak. I mean, it's just turmoil. That's why they have, I mean, listen, now I'm going off, but you know those like Ronald McDonald houses and stuff?
Yes.
All those things for around hospitals. That's all about supporting the families.
Family.
Even like the City of Hope in Duarte here in California. It's all about helping the family around the sick one because these people need so much support. I mean, it's
one of the great things about the lesbian community that we were involved in is how many of them stepped up and didn't step up for me. I was in the hospital. They stepped up for Jay. Like I said, our two friends who literally dropped their lives. They're dentists. They have a dental practice in near Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
They dropped everything and like
amazing.
Literally were on a flight that night.
That's so cool.
To come out here and take care
That's
of
so kind.
Janine.
Yeah.
Because they knew immediately that she would be insane and what was going on. You know what I mean? The people in our lives that stepped forward for Janine are my heroes. Just to even think that way, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's incredible. And it's nice when you don't have to tell people things. Like when they just do it, that's a beautiful thing. You know, and that's such a, you know, when people around you love you like that, you don't have to explain anything. They know.
Right.
There's fruit on the counter. You got to put it in the refrigerator. There's a hot, you know, whatever. Just do the fucking work and don't bother me with pettiness.
Wait, I have to tell you one thing that's just so stupid. Remember you said, oh, you have hiccups?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, well, it kind of has to do with the story. And then I realized that didn't make sense. But when they intubate you.
Yeah.
And this is just a little piece of information.
Sure.
If you're ever around, make sure that if you're a girl, that they intubate you with a female or a child's intubation tube because they're smaller.
Yeah.
They didn't think to do that with me. So they kind of nicked a little something on my...
On your
so
vocal cord.
So I now... Yeah. So, and it might be bad if I was a singer, but I'm not.
Fuck.
But Bill, but what it does is means I get hiccups all the time. They come, they go. It's just, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
you know
but
what
you
I mean?
Could injure your back with hiccups. I swear to God, like you could do.
They're just little ones. They're not.
Okay,
yeah.
It's not like spasms.
No, I just.
What
go,
about the teaspoon of sugar thing? Did you ever try that?
I try everything because I was a bartender.
Oh, yeah.
I was a bartender for 10 years and I learned all those bartender tricks. Like the one where you do this, where you drink the water. Wait, what's that thing where you drink the water like
you
good, this?
Go. Oh, yeah. Try not get any air in there or something. And so there's all these
Or backwards.
That's hilarious.
And my girl will, every once in a while when she's feeling it, she'll, if I'm hiccuping around the house, she'll do the, hey! It
works.
That's
adorable. That's adorable. That's, and I'm so happy you guys are still together. That is longevity to get through.
Oh, we will never be apart now.
No,
we
that's have what I'm saying. Through, that's through hell and back. Hell and back.
And no one will ever understand. Like, every fourth time I'm staring at her as we're watching a movie or hanging out somewhere, I'm thinking,
thank you.
What must it feel like to get down on your hands and knees and do, on the street, in a place you don't even know, you've just moved there, and do CPR for your girlfriend? Like, how do I ever even thank her for that?
Yeah, you kind of can't.
You just don't.
You're so lucky.
And yet she doesn't think of it every day.
What if you'd been on your own, or if you, you know, well, I guess the
restaurant
would help
you. Or what if she had never learned?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Everything about it. We know, we look at the whole thing and we say, we are to be together.
Oh, that's
and we are
really
so
nice.
Comfortable. We don't want to get married because we feel like that's really very sort of 60s. But we're like feminists.
Marriage is all about tax breaks or not. You know what I mean? It depends.
Yeah.
Is it worth it money-wise? Do you have children? Do I have children? Where does the money need to be to get the most out of it? I know, but I'm just saying, like, that is really about marriage. It's about what will the law do for us financially if we are or if we aren't? And then you choose whichever one
because
that is.
We're married.
Yeah, I know.
Forever.
Yeah. My sister's
we
the
know
same
it.
Way. My sister's been with her boyfriend for 15 years. Hi, Tracy. She's in Connecticut. She's been with her boyfriend for 15 years, and I hate saying her boyfriend because they own a house. They owned another house. So I just
I know,
say her
I
husband.
Hate that part
I just
too.
Say I just say her husband. I just say it. I don't care. I can't. It's too many. Everybody gets one from me, and I'm just saying they're married.
My girlfriend says Spartner. It's spouse,
spouse
partner.
Partner. That's so cute.
It's Spartner.
That's
she says, this
very
is my
funny.
Spartner.
That's very funny. I like that.
She's
hey, listen,
pretty funny too.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. This has been an
I'm
amazing.
I'm sorry it wasn't a funny story.
Program. No, but you are so interesting and you're so fascinating, and I'm just so fucking thankful you're alive. I mean, really, really. Congratulations for getting through that, coming out the other side, learning from it, becoming even a better person, and now you can share this with other people. Because it's truly, at the end of the day, it's an inspiration. That's it. It's an inspiration.
But I can't share it on stage via comedy. It doesn't really work.
No, but I do a storytelling show.
Really, this is a brilliant thing that you're allowing me to do it here.
Aw, thanks. And I also do a live show at Flappers every month, so if you want to do it at Flappers, I'll have you.
But does it have to be funny? Because it's Flappers?
No. I mean, most of the time, it just has to be entertaining. Like the other night, we were on stage, and Kelly Carlin was on, and she told a story about sleeping with Lyft Garrett, you know, back when she was in high school. It wasn't funny, but it was interesting as hell.
Entertaining.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So that's all. You know what I mean? As long as it's entertaining.
Okay.
And I booked my friend Naomi Grossman. She's an actress, and she's like, you know I'm not a stand-up, right? And I'm like, yeah, Naomi, I fucking know you're not a stand-up. I didn't book you. You're interesting. You're an actress, you know? So anyway, this has been great fun. Thank you so much again, Suzanne. I appreciate
you
it.
You made my morning.
Oh, cool.
I never tell this story.
Oh my God. I feel very excited then. Good. That's exciting.
Like never.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm very flattered that you said it on Storyworthy. Thank you. All right, you
Thank
guys.
You.
Listen, we got to wrap it up, but I did want to remind you to check out StoryworthyPodcast.com and also follow me on all the socials at Storyworthy. You know that. Then you should head over to Twitter and let Suzanne know that you liked her story, and you can find her at SZWest1. All right, you guys, one more
what
time.
What are you on Twitter? I want to follow you.
At Storyworthy. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very, very talented Suzanne Westenhofer. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sweetheart.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com. I'll keep you safe.